everybody. Welcome to the Talk to Danielle podcast. I am your host, Danielle C. Baker. And before we get started, be sure to like, follow, and subscribe to whichever channel you're listening or watching from. And we are already on season three. So I invite you to have a look at the two previous seasons. I'm sure there's some episodes there that may resonate with you with your realities now. So go ahead and have a look at those. And today I have another amazing guest. I'm really excited to have him on. We've had a chance to talk a little bit before we recorded, and I just love his take on the subject. I think it touches on many of us. I have the wonderful Anthony Moore with me here. He is I'll let him introduce himself, but we're particularly going to be talking about his book that's called titled Every Other Weekend. So thank you so much, Anthony, for coming on and joining me today.
Well, hi, Danielle. Thank you for having me on. It's a pleasure. And I'm delighted to talk with you and, of course, plug my book. Here it
Course.
is for everybody to see. Every Other Weekend, Coming of Age with Two Different Dads. It's a memoir. This little thing up here is an award, the Royal Dragonfly Award. It's picked up quite a few, but this is one of the ones I'm proud of. And let's take it away. Happy to
Let's
talk
take
about it. Anything you want to chat about
it.
from the book to how to raise squid, whatever you want to say.
I love it. We'll definitely talk about the every other weekend. But before we get started, can you kind of briefly tell us your story and how you got to where we are today?
Well, yeah, basically, how did the book come to be? Let's put it that way. I was a lawyer, and my parents had a good friend who ran a literary agency, the Rees Halsey Agency. And Reese and his wife Doris were my parents' age. And I got very friendly with them somewhere in law school. And they said, "Hey, you have a very good story about your father and about your stepfather. You ought to write about it." And I said, "My life's boring. And by the way, I'm too busy being a lawyer." Then I become a judge on the LA Superior Court. And once again, Doris, at this point, unfortunately, Reese had died, but Doris said, "You've got a great story. And now you're a judge. You ought to write it." And I said, "Doris, I'm boring, and I'm too busy being a judge." Well, but I've always enjoyed writing. I've worked on my high school paper, college paper, law school paper, local bar newspaper, all of this stuff. And so finally, one time I went to a writing conference, and you had to submit some things. And I wrote a couple of essays about California. And one of them was about my father in the Christmas parade because he was an actor, a well-known B-list actor. And people liked it. It got published. And Doris said, "You've got to write this into a book. I keep telling you." And I said, "Okay, you're right. I'll do it." And I started very slowly. I'd write an essay or two or three. And then COVID hit and the courts shut down. So I wrote the book. And out it came, Every Other Weekend, Coming of Age with Two Different Dads. That's the story behind it.
That is so interesting. I love that. And I know what you mean. I think it's many authors have that same story. We've had that book in mind for a very long time, but life
Right.
just happens. And so I'm glad it did come out, though, because it's a wonderful book. And it's one of the conversations that we had, first conversations we had when we first met, was how back in the day, when in our times, divorce was such a foreign concept. It wasn't. Was almost a
Oh.
myth. So you've seen, especially with the courts, you've seen the evolution. But what is your take on the real impact that divorce has
The
on
real
children?
impact on divorce is it's traumatic. I don't care how friendly it is. I don't care how, the couple may stand in front of everybody and be holding hands and say it's time to move on. It's still a trauma. And when my folks divorced, I was 9 years old. It was 1957, 56, 57. And, for me, it was definitely a traumatic experience. It leaves a little hole in your universe. A little bit of a dent in your mental sky, if you will. And it's really hard to fill that. It really is. It takes years to fill that back up. So, divorce is an incredibly shattering event whenever it may occur. Maybe after 6 months of marriage and no kids, it's not that big a deal. Maybe, I don't know. But certainly, my folks have been married 19 years. It was a big deal.
It is, and that's what I like you touch on that, because that's all the children know when we're talking about the family portrait. I've lived a similar situation where my kids were grown. They're in their 20s. And you think that when the kids are older, they'll understand, they'll kind of get past it. But it was interesting for them to tell us, well, this is all we've known. So you had a life before you got married, but we've only had a life with our parents together. And they would actually be, especially nowadays, they'd be kind of proud of the idea that they were the only ones who probably still had their parents together. So even at a later age, it affects them. And this is what I like about your approach, your take on it is as adults, we are so caught up in the process of separation and divorce that we forget sometimes that our kids are also
Oh
feeling
yeah,
it.
they're affected. I know. I frankly didn't want to get married. I just said I had seen two very bad marriages and one very good marriage. I saw my parents' marriage, which wasn't stormy. I don't remember shouting matches or anything like that. But underneath, things were going on, and I know that because I liked to draw cartoons back then, and I still have the books. And every time adults talk to each other, flames are coming out of their mouth or their nostrils or their ears. Something's behind that. And then when my father remarried to the woman he left my mother for, that marriage was pathetically bad. And they did yell and scream. And he walked out one time and he had an affair that lasted until he died. So that wasn't any good. My mother and Stan, as her second husband, had a storybook marriage. So I had one out of three, if you will, but it wasn't enough. I just didn't want to get married. I did. I married at the age of 66. And it's been a good
I
marriage.
love.
I'm very
Yeah,
happy about it. But it took me a little while to back into it.
I love that story that you at 66, a lot of people would think you'd probably be on your second, third, fourth marriage, maybe, but your first one at 66, I think it's wonderful. I didn't want to get married either, just because I was too young to go through the actual divorce, but it was not a pretty co-parenting situation, if I can say. But
I'll
my
bet.
father did get together with another woman he's been with her for almost 50 years. They never remarried. So for me, marriage was just, well, why bother? My parents were married. That was horrible. Now my father and my stepmother are not married and they're doing fine. So what's the point? So
Yeah, that at some point you say, what's the point? But for me, the lady, Beverly, my wife, didn't want to get married, and there were some other reasons to do it. We suddenly realized, if something goes wrong from a health point of view and you're not married, you may be barred from seeing each other. And as a judge, I would get a pension. She would not get any of that if I happened to go before she did. So we finally said, oh, to heck with it, let's just get married.
Oh, that's good. That's very good. You do touch on your book about the family portrait. You talk about your dad, your stepdad, the dynamic there, but you really do touch on the reality of blended families. And this is what I appreciate is you kind of walk us through teaching your children about relationships and fairness and keeping promises. I thought those were very, very important. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Well, I mean, one thing you do if you're an adult is don't savage your ex in front of your children. That's not good. It's not fair. My parents didn't do that. I don't remember my father ever slamming my mother or my mother slamming my father. They talked about them, especially as I got older. And my mother said a few things about my father, about how he had a big, hard temper, which I knew he did. And how he could be lazy, which I knew he could. He was a great actor, but he had a lot of other talents. He could have written, he could have directed, but he slept till noon too many times in between acting jobs. And so we talked about that in a very, a candid way, but I was much older. I was then into my 20s or high 20s or 30s, but they didn't destroy each other, if you will. I've seen cases where in court, where one side demolishes the other, and it really doesn't it doesn't achieve anything.
Yeah, that doesn't go anywhere.
Right.
I've seen that as well. I'm in the education system, so I see the impact on the children on a daily basis where even if the parents are very careful with the way they interact with the other parent, the children are feeling it. They really are feeling it.
They do. They do. The one thing parents should do with kids if they're going to get a divorce is get the kid to therapy. It may be fine. I mean, the child might be thinking, okay, I'm great, I'm still happy, I'm doing well in school, I have my friends, and whatever. But you never know what's going on underneath. It's really a good idea to find somebody the child can talk to,
Yes.
outside the family. I think that that should be done. I wish it were done with me, but when I was a kid, the last thing you wanted to do was go to a psychologist. If you said to somebody, "I'm seeing a psychologist," they think, "What's wrong? You're crazy." Not now. Now it's very commonplace, but back then it wasn't. I remember a classmate, a very bright kid, who ended up going to Harvard, and he told me, "I can't do something after school. I have an appointment with my psychologist." And I thought, "Leland's crazy." He wasn't. He was brilliant. He unfortunately died of AIDS, but it was a sad loss.
Yeah. I like that you bring that up, as that was going to be one of the questions. You do advocate for that no matter what the situation is, it'll be important to have sort of an objective third party, neutral party to help the child go through. They may not feel their emotions right away, or they won't want to share with you because they don't want to hurt you. So the fact that you bring that up, especially exactly like you were saying, in a time where it was a bad thing to go see a therapist. And me growing up, it was the therapist was going to get you to go crazy. So you weren't crazy yet, but you will when you're done. So there's such a taboo there, but you bring that up and say there's some benefits to it. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, that's something you should do. That to me is job one. If you've got kids and there's going to be a divorce in the offing, that's what you do. And if you know it's coming, even set it up, get things arranged beforehand.
Yeah, that's such a good advice. I really like that. Now, do you have any kind of advice for parents? Because the family portraits have changed so much in the last few decades. How can you help? Because you touch on that on your book as well, on helping parents defining what it is to be a family. But now that family is not just, the traditional what we grew up with, do you have any advice on how parents could define that
I
new
think
family?
I would, you might say, look, you're gaining, if there are kids involved, you might say, they're going to be, you're going to have another sibling, you're going to have another brother, a younger sister, whatever it is. And, they're siblings, they're part of the family, and give them a chance. That's how it was presented to me when my mother remarried. The guy she married had two children. I was an only child, and I wanted, a brother. So when I found out I was going to get a brother, even though he was 5 years older, I was delighted. And then I was going to get a sister who was 2 years younger. I wasn't that ex although, we're still all very, very close. In fact, today is my brother's birthday, and we were chatting. The three of us were on the phone having a good time. So, it presented as, you're going to now have some more people to play with, if you will. And when my father remarried, the lady remarried, had two children, two sons, and they were both younger than I, one by 4 years, one by 6 years. And at that age, when you're, 9 years old, they're little kids. There's really not much to relate to, but you try. We're friendly too. I'm in touch with both of them.
That's nice.
Still.
It's good to not turn the families against each other. I think that's very important. Had the same portrait on my side with my dad's wife or partner. She had a son from a previous marriage. He was always my brother, and it was never a question of my stepbrother or, he's just my brother. We grew up together, and he bugged
Good.
the heck out of me, and I was the baby of the family, so I bu bugged him and my sister. That was just
Okay.
real siblings, So,
Yeah.
yeah, it's
Sometimes
important.
it works out better than the real siblings. I have friends who have, I know one person, a lovely, lovely lady. I knew her back in high school, and she was as cute and lovely as she could be. And she had an older sister, and I thought they were really friendly. We still know each other, and, she now just doesn't communicate with the older sibling. They're totally, not estranged, but they're not close at all. It's too bad.
It is too bad. Yeah. Oh, there's so many questions that come up, but I wanted to see, we talk about the impact it has on children and, how therapy can help, but is there anything else that we may be overlooking now that could help, especially for children when it comes to divorce and separation?
Well, look, make it clear that they're not losing a parent. Okay. Make it clear the parents are still there for them. My father was very good about that. He said, "Look, I'm still your father and I'm still your pal." He started to use that word a lot. And I talk about that in the book quite a bit, how he wanted to be my quote unquote pal. And he made good on that. If he made a date with me to do something, he kept it. And that's something not all parents do. There's a memoir, a very well-known memoir called The Tender Bar by a guy named J.R. Moringer. And he talks about how his father, who was also a radio personality, never kept a date. He'd be out there on the front porch steps waiting for his father to show up, and the dad never did. And that's devastating. So, keep in touch, and you're going to say you do something, you do it. That's absolutely essential because you want to keep that connection going. Kids will remember if you stand them up, don't show up, don't treat them the way you used to.
That is so true. They take that with them into
Yeah.
adulthood. But yeah. So
And
how?
the other parent, don't be an enabler.
Yes.
Don't start making excuses. Oh, your daddy didn't show up. I'm sure he had a reason to, you still love your daddy and your daddy loves you, and actually he wasn't feeling well. No, don't be an enabler.
That is interesting because a lot of the times the other parent could turn against the say he never kept his word or she never kept her word, but they sometimes do the opposite. They
Yeah,
protect
it could go either
them.
way, and you don't want it to
That's
go, to one extreme or the other.
I like that. Holding the other parent accountable for their choices. Yeah. Oh, that's so important. Thank you for sharing that. I really enjoyed it. I could really keep you on forever, but I wanted to talk about your book because every time I
There's
have a
one
conversation.
scene, there's one scene. My stepdad had a stepmother, his former wife, my sister's and brother's mother, and she was a problem. She was alcoholic. She was a piece of work, and he would send her a check for support and to say buy clothes for Leslie, my sister, and she wouldn't do it. She spent it on, I don't know what, alcohol, God knows what. And so Leslie really dressed badly. My mother used to say she looked like a ragamuffin when she came over for the weekend. That was her word, a ragamuffin. And Stan got her on the phone and says, "Is this how you send her to school?" He was really angry, and yelling at her. And he said, "Look, I'm not going to buy clothes for her. You've got the budget to buy the clothes." Now, query, did he do the right thing not to buy her the clothes? Or did he do the right thing to say, "I'm not getting her anything. You've got the budget. You've got the alimony for that, the child support. Go do it, damn it." I don't know. All I knew is my stepsister's sister ended up getting a job at a freight forwarding company. It was a boring job to hear her say it, but she wanted money to get her own clothes and look halfway decent.
Yeah.
I wrote a chapter about that too.
That's interesting because every situation is different. But yeah, which is it right? Is it not right? And again, are you enabling by saying, okay, well, yeah, there's so many
Yeah, I'll
questions
buy
there.
her the clothes. I'm going to take her to town and we're going to buy some clothes for her, even though I
Yeah.
sent you money and you're using the money on, God knows what.
That is really interesting. And again, every time I talk with you, there's so many things I want to talk about some more, but let's talk
That's
about
fine.
how can people get your book if you want to show it up again and show the book cover every other weekend?
Here it is one more time.
Yes, I love it.
Okay. The book is available on Amazon, as is everything else on the planet. It's available at Barnes and Noble. It's available at Thrift Books, at IndieBound. You can go to your own brick and mortar bookstore and ask for it, and they'll order it, especially Amazon. I'm sorry, Barnes and Noble. If you walk into Barnes and Noble and say, "I want the book," if they don't have it, and they probably won't, they'll order it for you. I've tested it myself. I know they'll do it. So it's
What I
not
like
hard to
about
get the book. I do have a website. I do have a website, anthonyjmoore.com. Okay, www.anthonyjmoore.com. You can go on there. You'll order the book. It'll link you to Amazon, but you can get the book there.
That's
So
wonderful.
it's out there and it's easy to get.
Great. I'll put that information in the description as well so people can refer
Sure.
to it if they want to have it.
Thanks. Thank you.
Do you have anything coming up? Are you working on anything new
Well,
or people to share?
there's a side of me I've been encouraged to write about what it's like to be a judge. And so I've been writing some essays about that. If I like them enough and if they work well enough, I could link them and make a book out of it. Not sure what the title will be. You don't name the baby till it's born. But it would be a collection of what life on the bench is like. Now, I got to warn you and your listeners, a lot of books about judges are boring. Okay. People don't know what judges do with their lives, but a lot of it is, I heard a case, it was a car accident, somebody ran the light and got hurt. I ruled for the plaintiff, or I ruled for the defendant. Next case, somebody tripped and fell at Kmart. There was a question whether the floor was clean. The jury came back with a verdict for X dollars. Next case, yawn. People get tired of that really quickly. And there are books like that. I know there's one written by a judge from Connecticut. And I think the subtitle was Memoirs of a Judge at Work. I never finished it. I put it down. And you would think I would like a book about judging. It wasn't that good. Another person whom I know from our court wrote a book, kind of a diary of 1 year on the bench, and you could have cut half of it. I mean,
Oh,
she
wow.
had a lot of good things to say, but between you and me and the lamppost, half the book could have been taken out. So I don't want to bore my readers. And so when I find myself writing something, it often slops over into something really humdrum, and I don't like that. I want the prose to really work and to hook the reader. So it's taking time. The good news is I've had about five of essays about judging published. And so those will go into the chapters. One was about a very humdrum eviction case, but it worked on the page. Another one was about what happened after I made a ruling and learned later what I did to the people. Because you usually don't know what had the after effects or the fallout, and I happened to find out. So I wrote one about that. I had another one published. It's actually been longlisted for an award, about a lawyer from my firm that I did not get along with. And many years later, he appeared in front of me
Ooh.
and how I handled that. So that essay is called Totally Atwood. Atwood was his name. And then another one about wondering whether to retire. Okay, consider the door. That one was published as well. So, if I get enough of these going, maybe it'll become a book. I had one other, it was called I Missed an Instruction, about forgetting to give the jury an instruction and what I did. That one came out in Sounding Zeist, which is a print journal. But if you want to order Sounding Zeist or the back issue, you can find it.
Wow.
So keep your fingers crossed.
Yeah. No, and keep us posted. I'll have you back on to talk about that book if
That
it
would be
does.
nice. It's
Yeah,
going to be a while,
absolutely.
though. This is not happening in the next 2 months.
No, that's it's a lot, and just to choose the stories and how to present them too. Like you say, you don't want to be just,
So true.
you wanted to
So
make it.
true.
I mean, the ones you described, I'd want to read because you bring the human side of the
If you
justice.
Google me, you'll find them.
Yeah. I love
Or you
that.
go to my website and you'll find links to them.
Okay, wonderful. I'll have a look. And I know I've seen I'll invite the listeners as well to have a look. You're on a few more podcasts as well. I was listening to some of them. And there's some pretty tough questions on political views and some, social injustices. And I just like the way that you present the subject. It could be a very tough subject, but it's still very, you look at all the different angles. It's not your opinion. It's just this is different
Right.
angles. This is how we have to look at it. And it gives us a different view of a situation. And I
Yeah.
really do like that.
One thing that struck me, and I didn't get into this in the book as well as I should have, but that is, once you're divorced, the parents are divorced and remarried, or even if they're not remarried, your friends in school are not going to know both sides. Chances of them meeting both parents are remote because they're apart. Even if they're in the same town as mine were, you don't meet the two of them. My parents all met my mother and stepfather. One person met my father as well, but very briefly, very briefly. And nobody I went out with, and I didn't do that much dating in high school. I was kind of a shy kid, afraid to ask anybody for a date. But the few times I did, those girls never met my father. They met my mom, they met Stan, but they didn't meet my father. And many of them didn't even know he was an actor. And he was well known. I mean, he was, on a lot of Westerns, he always played the bad guy. And, he was in some movies, mostly B movies, but he worked, he was with Rita Hayworth in one, with Kirk Douglas in another, with Mamie Van Doren in another. I mean, he had, his time in movies. His last movie was Funny Girl. And but again, not many people knew that. I didn't brag about it. Of course, I went to a school where everybody's was a celebrity's kid or knew somebody, so it wasn't a big deal.
But that's true. It didn't stand out because it
Yeah.
was everybody's
I'd gone to
reality.
school in, West Virginia or North Dakota, it might have been a different story. But in West Los Angeles, come on, when everybody's somebody, why nobody's anybody.
So true. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's so true. It's a good point too, that not everybody's going to get to meet the family. And yeah,
Right.
that's another reality. That's interesting. I'd always ask this question. I could keep you on, but before we wrap up, I asked this question and I prepared you for it because it's a
Yes,
question I
you
ask
did.
everybody, so that you didn't think it. A lot of people think I'm, if I don't explain it, they think I'm weird. The infamous question of what do you want to be when you grow up?
Want to be playing for the Philadelphia Eagles, baby.
I
I
love
don't
that.
think that's going to happen since I couldn't run, catch, or do anything in school like that.
Anything's possible.
But other when I grow up, I don't know. Edit the Atlantic Monthly because I always edited little journals along the way. That would be
Oh,
fun. Work for the CIA.
nice.
That would be fun. The Directorate of Plans, something like that. Although I'd be scared out of my mind to go out in the field, being alone in some little hotel in some godforsaken place, watching would-be terrorists making their plans. I think I'd be scared out of my mind, but it sure sounds romantic and exotic and fun.
Yeah, you'd have a whole other book to write after that
Yeah,
experience.
right. I'd love to write a novel about that, but you have to write what you know. And I don't know anything about that area. I have a couple of friends, one of whom admitted to being in the CIA. He was a client when I was a lawyer. And he kept denying it. And finally, we were going to trial, and it was important for the case. And I kept pounding him. And finally, he said, yeah, I was a CIA agent. And then there was another person who's a friend, still a friend. And she was in the Foreign Service, and I met her in all sorts of places just because we were always close friends. So I met her in Prague, I met her in London. Where else did I meet her? Somewhere else too, Paris or someplace. And then she started getting assignments to the Middle East, to Ashgabat, to Islamabad, and she said, you can't come and meet me there. It won't work. And I was convinced she was CIA, and she's never admitted it. But at her wedding, I met a lot of people who definitely had CIA connections. We were at a table and they were sitting around going, remember that time in Riyadh? Yeah. I go, what happened? Oh, we can't tell you that,
They kind of gave it away.
Yeah.
That's so interesting. Well, maybe you could go on a ride along and get your stories
Yeah,
from
right.
that.
I've done it. As a judge, I went on police ride-alongs. So those were fun. They were interesting. There was one guy who did share what happened because the secret is no longer classified. There were these little submarines, I guess two men, two women submersibles, and they were off the coast of East Germany, and they submerged and sailed into an East German harbor. They sailed around the harbor taking pictures of everything, and then they sailed out of the harbor and went back to the mothership and took off. Had they been caught, I mean, they would have been hell to pay. They probably would have been, tortured. But they made it through and made it done, and they told me all about it.
That's incredible.
Yeah, it really
No,
is. I'm sitting going,
no stress there.
yeah, and yet here I am in front of my little computer.
That's okay. Oh, that's amazing. I love these stories. I could really keep you on for. How can people follow you or reach you if they want to know more about your work or if they want to know more about you?
I'm on Facebook, I'm on LinkedIn, Instagram. I don't do a lot of social media. I have that baby boomer's reluctance to get involved with it, but I'm there, somebody could find me, or as I said, you go on the go to the website and you can contact me.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
I'll make sure to add that to the again to the description so people can have a
Right.
look and see see how they can
But
see your
just
work.
don't contact me if you want to get me into cryptocurrency
No, right.
or
Oh my
bellies or
goodness.
something like that. I get those. I
I
get those.
know.
It's so silly.
Yeah, I have so many people. Yeah, that's what I say. Just be serious. If you to come at me if you're serious about something. Yeah. I'm the same way. So, thank you so much again. Before we go, is there anything else you'd like to add or to
Danielle, it's
take
been a
a look at?
pleasure. Thank you. I've
That
really
was one.
enjoyed it.
I really enjoyed it. And whenever you want to come back on, if you have new things coming up, you're more than welcome to come back on.
Got a deal. You take care.
Thank you. And
All right.
for everybody watching, be sure to like, follow, and subscribe to whichever channel you're listening or watching from. And make sure
Got it.
to check out Anthony's website as well so you can get access to his book. And thank you again, Anthony, for joining me. I really
Okay.
appreciated it.
Thanks so much. It's been a pleasure. You take care now.
You too. And for everybody watching, take care. And until next time, stay safe, stay awesome, and we'll talk soon.